contest at the end of the action, 12 teams came and competed for gold. As they fell by the wayside, two teams rose to play in the final. In the men's, it was Australia and Belgium. It was a classic juggernaut final that ultimately went down to shootouts. And in the cruelest way possible, it was the Belgians who won their first ever gold medal and will celebrate success along with assistant coach Craig Fulton from South Africa. In the men's tournament, it is Belgium as the champions. The women's tournament, of course, had one outright favourite. And what we know is how difficult it is to lead from the front. For Netherlands, it wasn't. They were dominant from day one till day 14. And today, in a 3-1 victory against Argentina, they have lifted the gold medals that they so badly wished they had done in 2016. Champions once again, Alison Annan there. And of course, a South African and their coaching staff, Red Talcott, congratulations. Joining me to discuss it, to digest it, to break it all down is our heavy hitters. It's none other than Justin Redross and Marsha Cox. Guys, welcome. Thanks for joining me as you have. Wow. Let's start with yesterday. And simply the best way to say this is, wow, what a great final.
Yeah, definitely. Kai, great to be on again. Thanks for having me. Wow, yeah. I think the two best teams of the tournament meeting in the final, two highest goal scorers of the tournament meeting in the final, two high scoring teams. I think it was always going to be an exciting game. Cagey, as you can imagine, the final to be. Pretty happy that we eventually saw a couple of goals falling. What a cool way for an Olympic final to finish with shootouts.
And it was a really, really great game. We got to halfway 0-0. It was Belgium who had most of the action in the early parts of the game. They had more possession, more circle penetrations. They had a couple of penalty corners. Alexander Hendricks looking to try and break the record, needed a hat-trick. But he was, of course, denied. A really, really good defensive first half by Australia. But after all that work, they conceded really early in the second half. And that opened the game up a little bit, not quite into the goal-scoring spree that we maybe expected. But a bit of an opportunistic goal by Belgium. Not one that Van Obel will ever forget, though.
No, certainly not. And I think you hit the nail on the head there, Ty. It was a game that Belgium looked like they were going to dominate from start to finish, especially after the first few minutes of the game. I think that they've been a team that have got such a distinct style of play, really, really difficult to break down and are so dangerous going forward. And yeah, looking at Australia, again, I think maybe even overachieved a little bit this tournament. You know, going through the pool phase, they got some really big results and I think did really well. But that might have to do with the fact that nobody had seen them before the game started, playing the typical attacking brand of hockey, but with a fairly inexperienced side, a couple of young players in there that I think a lot of people wouldn't have seen or wouldn't have really even heard of before. Getting to the final, I think, was a big achievement for them. Being there, they probably would have expected themselves to take it one step further. Especially for players like Eddie Ockerman, probably playing in his last games, somebody that's won pretty much everything except Olympic gold. I think they would have really wanted to do it for someone like that. But the goals that were scored, pretty opportunistic, like you say. Florent Van Obel he's known as the magician, and you can see why, just pouncing on a very small opportunity and turning it with some really fantastic handwork into a fantastic goal. So that set things off, set the tone for the game, and really opened things up a little bit in the second half. And I think the Aussies will be pretty chuffed with the way they came back. Despite not having many chances in the game, they still managed to sneak a goal back and force the draw.
Marsha, yourself, when you're watching that, it really was a proper juggernaut battle, a proper technical final. Belgium looked the better team, but all of a sudden they were pegged back at 1-1. And it, to me, felt like Australia were looking more likely to go win it in normal time.
Yeah, I think prior to the game, we all knew that it was going to be a game where you were going to see world-class and very technical play. Tactics were going to be important, but we definitely were not going to see a dogfight out there with some physical, you know, play with somebody dropping a shoulder or getting in the way physically. That for me is always quite exciting to watch. So I was a little disappointed that there were no physical clashes, but on the other hand, it was really entertaining to see two teams that set the standard for the rest of the world to sort of achieve. And they came out and they put out a classy performance. With the shootouts, I was a bit nervous for Australia, considering the comment that I had heard from Mo Firstad the day before, where he said that the Australian goalkeeper is not the strongest at shootouts. So I was a little bit nervous for them in that regard, and sort of keen to see how the pressure of a final situation would impact on both of these teams. But I think the result was as we predicted. Belgium deserved that goal.
Yeah, and I mean, what a moment for Shane McLeod. That is the way he is signing out as the head coach of Belgium, 6 years in charge, and he has revolutionized that hockey program. He turned them around into world beaters, Olympic silver medalists, World Cup champions, European champions. I mean, the man has done it all. There must be a queue of people wanting to get him in charge now.
Yeah. I think there'll definitely be a lot of people, you know, vying for his signature to take over national programs. But take nothing away from the platform that was built before him as well. You know, Belgium have come a long way since 2007, and you know, guys like Gilles Bonnet probably set the ball in motion back then. And from then, it's kind of snowballed into, you know, bringing in some really high quality coaches from the Southern Hemisphere, from Australia, New Zealand in particular, not only into their national setup, but also into their club setup. And you'll argue that the Belgian competition is getting to the point of being, you know, as big as the Hofklasse in terms of European competitions, up there with the German competition. And you can just tell by the quality of players coming out of that setup. I mean, the Belgian squad is deep. They probably could have selected a number of other players for this tournament and still, you know, still achieved what they've achieved here. You look at a guy like Thomas Brils, who wasn't even selected in the initial 16. You know, when you can make a choice like that to leave your captain and over 300 cap international out of your Olympic 16, you know, he eventually did play because of the change in rules. But you know, those types of decisions also means that you have a wealth of options available to you. And you know, credit to Shane, I think he's made some bold decisions and they've paid off. And you know, for him to stick around an extra year to make this a reality, you know, I think we saw the footage of him after the game in the dugout on his own, you know, just having a moment and letting it sink in. You know, I think I don't think there would have been many hockey players or hockey lovers, no matter who you root for, seeing that and not getting goosebumps or a little shiver down the spine, and out of sheer respect for someone that's put so much into the game.
Yeah, another man who's put a lot into the game and deservingly sits atop the winner's podium is Craig Fulton, ex-teammate, current friend for the two of you guys. I mean, yeah, what'll this mean to Nettie and what's next for him?
Yeah, very, very good question. I mean, I know he's got a pretty good setup, you know, coaching his club hockey in Belgium, where I almost made my way to this last season. But yeah, fantastic work for Nettie. I mean, you know, we know him as a fantastic coach. We know him as someone that, you know, would have loved to have been at the helm of South African hockey a while ago. And that opportunity, you know, never came. So he went and looked elsewhere. And, you know, look at what he's done with some fantastic setups over the last couple of years. He's developed into a really fantastic coach, someone that really connects with the players really well. And I think that's been his role here. You know, Shane is a master tactician and keeps an eye on the details. And you've got Michel van der Heuvel, you know, there to, you know, really you know, hammer home the details with the players, and that's what he's known for. And Neddy is the kind of guy that's just gonna be there to kind of bring the vibe and bring the, you know, the fun element into the group and make sure the guys are enjoying themselves while getting the best out of themselves. And you could just see it in this Belgian team. You know, any minute of the game, these guys are playing with so much intensity and so much energy, but also just enjoying themselves, absolutely loving what they're able to do, what they've been working so hard to do, and the confidence just drips off them. I mean, young guys like Antoine Kina just trapping half bouncy balls in the backhand and eliminating one or two players. I mean, this guy's in his early 20s and he looks like he's been playing international hockey for 15 years. I mean, this is really a team that it would have been a massive surprise, I think, if they hadn't achieved what they did. And I think that's down to a fantastic staff setup that they've managed to get around the group.
Another interesting thing is the South African men finished with the fifth most goals in the tournament, behind the top four, playing obviously two games less than most. That must be well, you won't be happy that you're at the tournament, but it must be a nice positive sign for them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, being able to score goals against the best teams in the world is a massive achievement at the best of times. And you know, we've seen the team kind of come out with their own brand of hockey and attacking, you know, what I would like to call a South African brand of hockey. And if that means you're going to concede a few at the back, yeah, that so be it. That's part of the process. And I think we've really developed a group of players up front that are able to score goals against the very best in the world. So they'll definitely take that going forward and, you know, use it also going into big tournaments next year.
And not just just scoring against the best team, but also scoring against the best keeper. You know, like at the end of the day, a goal scoring opportunity is a battle between that person taking the shot and the keeper. And knowing that our players are capable of still outsmarting and outskilling the best keeper in the world when given the opportunity, I think that's a huge compliment and motivation to keep raising the bar.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's talk about the men's tournament. And I haven't really prepped you guys for this question, so apologies, but who are the standout players, you know, both from the young sides, from the younger players, but also which players stood out for you? I don't need to necessarily say a player of the tournament, but two or three players. Oh, let me just stop there. Two or three players that stood out for you over the course of the tournament.
Marsh, you want to take us away?
Yeah. Okay, well, for me, of course, Hendricks with his conversion rates on the penalty corner. I think, you know, Justin, you know him from the Hove cluster as well. What has been really impressive for me is that in the environment where you're with your national team and you're given the space and the confidence, he's stepped up to it in his infield play. But then stepping up for your team in the moments that count the most, which is your job to put away the drag flick. Everybody knows in the whole cluster that he's extremely dangerous there. So I think all teams play around to make sure that you don't concede a penalty corner against them in the club league. But in, you know, for the Belgians, you couldn't do that because they were just all round good all over the field. And he knows his job, and that's to score at the penalty corner. And for me, that is to be able to do that under pressure time and time again. I put him at as one of my top players. And then, you know, to be honest, I'm gonna pay some tribute to players who we said goodbye to early in the tournament. And of course, we can't ignore our Kasim brothers who came and put, you know, shock the world with who are these young South Africans. And we spoke about them in length, so I won't spend too much time on them, but they would definitely go down for me as top players. And then I would like to also pay tribute to our player like David Allegra from from Spain, who is just solid. His work rate is incredible. He's got the skill, but he's not the flashiest player if you compare him to the others, the likes of what's his name, Felix, in the Belgian team. And you know, he's not the flashiest, but he does stand out for Spain. And when he's not there, I think that there's going to be a hole. So those would be my players that I would like to mention.
I think you've named some quality players there, Marsh. And you know, I think obviously looking at the final, Hendricks, you know, hard to look past. And I chatted very briefly to Ty about this before this podcast. But for me, I think it's also difficult to look past Vincent van Asch, as somebody that's just, you know, he's one of those players that you don't necessarily notice during the game making incredible saves because it's almost expected of him now. And having been lucky enough to spend time with him in Delhi or at the Hockey in Italy playing for the Delhi Wave Riders, there are not many people in the world that I would just love to have achieved this than him. Knowing his work ethic and his commitment, it is exceptional. It is probably that he's the hardest working athlete I've ever come across. This is a goalkeeper. You know, he has really taken goalkeeping and the skill of goalkeeping to a whole nother level. And just looking at the confidence that he had in the final, you know, making some incredible saves, but then also having the mental strength to save the winning shootout, have it referred and have to retake it, come back and then saving it again. You know, that is mental fortitude at a whole nother level. So a big shout out to Vincent. I think for me, somebody that really stood out. I'm going to follow your trend of speaking about Spanish players. And again, my dad's going to be chuffed with me, but I'm going with the keeper, Kiko Cortez. You know, again, somebody that's done such a service to the game. You know, an absolute character, an absolute standout performer for so many years. You know, I think he'll be really chuffed with the way that he ended his career. And looking at our South African side, the Kassim brothers would definitely stand out. It's hard to look past them. But I do think it's worth mentioning somebody that I kept an eye on throughout the tournament, and I think kind of glued the team together for a long period of the tournament was Nick Spooner. Somebody that I thought really just did his job, but had loads of energy to get up in attack, support, score goals, get back in defense, kind of run the midfield. And that was really kind of an important role for me in this tournament, you know, keeping the connection between the strikers and the defenders, where that stretch can happen quite quickly, where you have a disjoint between your strikers and the defenders. And I think the whole midfield did a really fantastic job in keeping that together. And a particular highlight for me was watching Nick, really, really kind of come into his own in the national side during this tournament.
Yeah. One or two other names that have popped up, obviously, from Spain, just because, I mean, he's a legend in his own right. Well, in everyone's right, but Pau Kamada, the goal against Australia to seal the draw and obviously keep them in the tournament was just, maybe he didn't have his best tournament, but absolutely, what an outstanding moment, maybe the moment of the tournament besides South Africa beating Germany. I think if we're talking South Africa, the third part of that front three of Billy and Tuli, I think he completes the Kassims quite well. I also thought for most of the tournament, we saw a very impressive Aaron Zalewski.
I mean, he was definitely someone I was going to mention as well.
But for me, I sit just the other side of Justin. I go Hendricks number one and van Asch number two, but the difference between the two, and I mean, I completely see your reasoning there, Justin, is so close. What a great tournament, some great goals, some great moments, and really worthy champions. But probably the story of the championship isn't the team that came first or second. It's the team that came third. National heroes absolutely have taken their country away. Do you know, I didn't realize this, but India have not won. They've only won one Olympic gold medal since their hockey team won in 1980.
80, yeah, incredible.
A country of their size has only won one.
Yeah.
In that time, South Africa's won 15 or 16, I think it is now, with Tatiana.
And it puts our achievements there in perspective as well. You know, I've seen a lot of people kind of whining a bit about how we're achieving at the Olympics. I think that puts things in perspective to a certain degree.
Absolutely. But what a entertaining game yesterday. Again, the Germans all over India, 24 shots, and they managed to get 4 goals. Firk, Aruz, Velen, and Winfeder. And in truth, early doors, when they got the third goal in the 25th minute, they were 3-0 up, 3-1 up. You thought, okay, yeah. Germany have the bronze medal. And then India roared back in the space of 7 minutes, scored 4 goals and turned a 3-1 deficit into a 5-3 lead. It was sensational. That end of second quarter, beginning of third quarter, they then did enough to hang on. And arguably, it is the most popular medal at this entire Olympics is this one. You know, just you've played in hockey in the league. You know what it's like. Marsh, you've played again in India before. You know what it's like. I don't. Not many of our listeners do. Just explain to us how impactful you think this could be on Indian hockey.
Well, Ty, I don't think it's only on Indian hockey. I think it's going to be a massive impact on world hockey. And looking at what the women have achieved, you know, they finished stone last in Rio. They've made the semifinals. The men have made the semifinals. And I think it's going to be massive for hockey in general. You know, India having so much support for the game and obviously having a fairly important, you know, member of the FIH coming from India as well. You know, the achievement for the guys is massive. A bronze medal is huge for them. These guys have worked really, really hard. And I know the staff behind the scenes have worked incredibly hard. I also worked with Graham Reed, and I know what he's like as a human. And I think it would have been quite tough losing, 7-1, I think, to Australia during the course of the tournament. But he would have wanted to bite back and fight back. And you saw that in this Indian team. They didn't let any game from that moment get away from them. They were competitive. They played a fantastic brand of exciting hockey. And you always know with India that, you know, anything can happen. The game's never over. They're gonna bring out some unseen skill or some little bit of magic that's just gonna you know, turn things on their head. And I'm so stoked for the guys. You know, a lot of these guys that have got bronze medals are guys that I've played with and have been teammates and I've spent weeks with on tour in India. And you know, knowing what it's going to do for them and for their future is huge.
I'm muted. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we
can hear me.
No, we can hear you.
Oh, okay, now you can hear me now. Okay, sorry, I just thought that I had been muted. Yeah, I think, Justin, you've totally summed it up on how much this is going to impact world hockey. It's been an extremely long time that, you know, we've missed India at the top of hockey in the world. But, you know, just... If you just reflect on how long this journey actually has been for them, you've played at Hockey India League, but if you reflect back to the start of Hockey India League, one of their weakest points was their goalkeepers.
Yeah.
And if you look at how Srijesh has just climbed, you know, worked his way into being one of the best goalkeepers in the world, that also speaks a lot for the amount of time and effort that they have put into their program and identifying their weaknesses and doing something about it. The whole concept behind Hockey India League was to get India hockey back on the map. And it's taken a long time and it's taken some hard knocks, lots of learnings along the way. You know, finally they get the reward for all those years of a lot of time, effort, and investment, you know. So I think that they're well deserving of this, never mind it's all the compliments that we can give them for the type of hockey they play and their mindset and their attitude going into this event.
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely. It's a community that are pumped. And Do you know, on another day, if they had, maybe if the draw had worked out that they were playing Australia in the semi-final rather, I think they had the game. I know they got thumped by Australia in the group stage, but I think they had a game that could really ruffle the Australian feathers. I think Belgium's all-round game just was too much for them. But let's put a pin in the men's tournament. It was fantastic. Our world number ones, Belgium, absolutely superb. In truth, though, in that final, we weren't really sure who was going to win. We thought it would be Belgium, but it was anyone's game. I don't think the same could be said for today's final. And Justin, I know it's one of your great friends and one of your best coaches over the years in Alison Annan, who is the champion with Netherlands. In 2016, they were stunned by Great Britain in the final. In a game there, Maddie Hinch probably played the game that made her the keeper she is today, the personality she is.
Yeah.
But Argentina would have needed 11 players to do that today. Netherlands were all over them from first to last and, you know, ran out 3-1. But in truth, 3-1 was probably a unfair scoreline for the Netherlands. They were that much in control.
Yeah, obviously super, super stoked for Alison. You know, I know how hard she works and I know the attention to detail that goes in behind the scenes. And I think that would have been something that would have haunted her a little bit from Rio. You know, I think they deserved it then and they've certainly showed that over the last, you know, what is it, 5 years since then that they are by far the best team in the world. So, you know, I don't think there was, you know, from the spectator's perspective, any hesitation or any doubt that the Dutch were going to pull off a victory today. But, you know, it's still an Olympic gold medal match. You're playing against a team that is arguably, you know, always, you know, going to be playing that second best team in the world role. You know, I think in this tournament, Australia might have provided a slightly better competition in the final. But yeah, Dutch just a class above. Fantastic to see that the issues that they had with their penalty corners, you know, throughout the tournament coming right when it needed to. And yeah, for Kaya from Marsaka, you know, playing her last game before retiring, scoring two goals in the Olympic final and getting gold. Yeah, that's pretty exceptional.
It's an interesting one that, because I don't know if you saw I posted it on our WhatsApp group, Justin, but before today she was 1 from 24 from penalty corner, but big game, big moment, 2 from 3, and ultimately she was the difference between the two sides today.
Sorry, I was just gonna say about the stats, you know, I don't know if it was 1 of 24 that she had the opportunity for all 24, because that's the strength of the Dutch women at the moment, is that they've got options on that drag flick. They've got Motla and they've got her. And we know that Ava can also step up and
Lauren Stumm
and do something. Also scored from the corners. Stumm, yeah. Exactly. So they've got a wealth of options. And I would like to see a little, you know, it would be interesting to see how many kind of missed of her opportunities she got. But we know that with her experience, she is capable of putting it away. And today she just proved that.
The player that got on the end of the first one, of course, was Margot van Geffen. And, you know, this is a player we've known for long. She's a player that revels in the spotlight. She's a player that was quite vocal about GB.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. I really did. I enjoy a little bit of spice like that. So, yeah, it was great to see her. And arguably, she was one of the players who put her hands up to be player of the tournament.
Yeah, I think she's always consistent. And that's what we like about her. And she definitely is a match winner for the Netherlands, whether it is in the skill that she's going to bring to the team or whether it's the motivation that she's going to bring. And that's, she can carry a team on her shoulders. She's a quiet leader in that sense of she doesn't need a badge, a captain's band or anything like this, but she is a leader on the pitch in the way she motivates the girls. But one of the other standout players for me in the Dutch team was De Waard. You know, she is young, but she created a lot. and whether it comes off the platform from somebody like Mocho, who is so...
You muted yourself, Marsh, halfway through that. Well, Marsha figures. There we go. You had a momentary green card. You are back from your suspension.
Yes. Okay. So I was saying that Mocho, you know, I don't know whether Sonny can stand out so much because she's surrounded by players like Mocho who do all the hard work and are solid and have the skill, you know, so they can complement each other and balance it out. But I do think that Sander Hart was a standout player for me this whole tournament for the Dutch women.
Yeah, no, 100% agree, Marsh. And I mean, looking at Mocho and the role she plays, you know, she's come from being a very solid defender in that mix to stepping into the midfield. That's also not easy to do in the best team in the world, all of a sudden just taking on a new role. And, you know, she's grabbed the opportunity and like you say, she's a quiet leader. She gets on with her role. She's a fighter. You know, and she's not scared to open her mouth and I guess in a way be typically Dutch and say what she feels. Where a lot of the other players are maybe a little bit more modest especially when it comes to speaking with the press. So, you know, I think she's been fantastic in this tournament. I think she's stood up and got assists and scored goals when she's needed to. And speaking on players that have stood out, Jeanne, obviously, another fantastic midfielder, and she's proven it over the last couple of years that she's got the ability to play at this level. But for me, someone that I think I definitely need to mention, and I think I tweeted about this earlier this week, is Felice Albers. And this is a young girl who was, you know, doubted. Nobody was sure whether she'd be selected. She had a pretty good European Cup, but you know, she's not an out-and-out striker. She's been a midfielder most of her youth career. And you know, Alison put her in, and geez, what a performance! What a tournament from her. I mean, she scored some incredibly vital goals during the course of the tournament, and has just been dripping with confidence. You know, really, really just someone I think that we can keep an eye out for the future. And, you know, I think someone that reminds me very much of a player like Kim Lummers, who's just always in the right place at the right time, can score with a variety of skills and has got a good work rate. So I'm looking forward to watching her grow into that Dutch team over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and a good mindset. Did you see her interview before? She said, she had less than 10 caps, and she already said, my goal is to figure out how I stay in this team longer. And that, I think, is really, you know, one, it's realistic of the fact that the competition is tight, because I think, Justin, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that there's any single player in this squad that has not missed a major event or games, and whether it was being dropped or injured. Yeah. Every single one of these players has experienced being either dropped, the majority have been dropped sometime in their career, or they've been, there's only about three or four that have missed out due to injury. But for the rest, they've all had moments of huge disappointment where they've got to fight their way back into the team.
And that just shows the quality of that setup, is that it doesn't matter who you select, you're always going to be putting up one of the, if not the most competitive teams, one of the most competitive teams at any tournament.
Yeah, and the players and how much harder they've got to work to be in the setup.
Well, it wouldn't be an unfair statement to say that if the Dutch could take a second team, they would be a medal contention team. That is how good their program is. And that's not to be disrespectful to other nations. The gap between one and two, unfortunately, as we've seen today, is quite large. It is a rather big gap, but hopefully that is the kind of ambition that it teaches other teams to look at their programs and say, let's go. You know, for Argentina, I think they probably come to this tournament and say a silver medal is probably more than we were necessarily backing ourselves to get. So we'll be pretty proud. Obviously, you're always disappointed once you get there. I think Great Britain probably performed outside of their expectations, or maybe they would disagree with me, but I think they've achieved quite well. India making the final four is absolutely sensational, I think.
Yeah, fantastic.
Australia would be disappointed. I think potentially Spain would be disappointed that they... didn't take the opportunity available to them. You know, Ireland would be very disappointed with their performance. Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the top four, you've largely got four happy teams. And below that, eight teams who all, to varying degrees, feel they could have done better.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a fair point, Ty. I mean, I must admit, I mean, I think it must be really difficult going into a tournament for any team knowing that the Dutch are I mean, it's hard to not acknowledge the fact that they're so far ahead. So, you know, I think you've hit the nail on the head there that the teams in the top four will be happy with where they finished. I think India probably being the most happy, apart from the gold medalists, of course. You know, looking at the other teams, it's always going to be a battle. You know, when the distance between the quality of the teams, especially in that group from four down, is so much smaller than what it is above that. You know, so you've seen teams like Ireland maybe overperform in the last couple of years. Again, like I think Marsh said before we started this recording, you know, a lot of teams go through ebbs and flows of quality and of performance, and not everyone gets the timing right. And GB are a great example of a team that know how to get the timing right. They peak at the right times, and they've shown it again. They probably didn't have their best squad, and they probably didn't have their best tournament, but they've still ground out a bronze medal, which, you know, credit to them. They've again pulled off a medal at the world's biggest sporting event. You know, through a combination of timing and you know, and work ethic and a good program, I think.
Yeah, it's a great point. That's three Olympic Games in a row that they've medaled. You can't now start saying it's a shock anymore.
No. Yeah. Definitely not.
Certainly our expectations. And yeah, I suppose the thing that does offer itself quite an exciting prospect right now is that we're less than a year from the Commonwealth Games. We are less than a year from the World Cup. You know, usually post Olympics, you kind of let the momentum completely fall apart and rebuild. But dynamics have to change now because of the way COVID has changed the process.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the teams manage their squads, manage their players. You know, there's not a big break now before going into the European seasons. So I think a lot of players will be, you know, will have heavy legs and you know, I think mentally be quite strained after going through what they've had to go through to get to Tokyo. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the national associations manage those players going into another very, very intense international hockey year. You know, I think players are going to have to look after themselves. They're going to have to prepare well, you know, physically and mentally for the upcoming club season, because you can't really take the foot off the gas. You want to make sure that you're keeping your level high and preparing yourself well for an intense 2022. There's some major tournaments and more opportunities to get medals. And, you know, I think teams are becoming more and more hungry to achieve those medals and achieve those goals. And I'm very, very intrigued to see how the teams are going to manage their build up into the major tournaments of next year.
We've also got a jam packed calendar because we know we've got for South Africa now, we've got the Nations Cup, we've got the Africa Cup of Nations, a World Cup, and the Commonwealth Games all in the space of 14 months. Marsh.
But isn't that super exciting as well? Because it's like COVID has also disrupted a lot of the programs, but then it also gave us insight to some of the innovative ways coaches have had to adapt and national associations have had to adapt, you know, at a certain point. Everybody was in the same boat. We were in lockdown. So, you know, so it's interesting. There's so many things that we can learn, but at the same time, with this short timeline, everybody's going to have to be adaptive and innovative. We can't be proactive anymore. We're going to have to be a little bit reactive to the circumstances. And for some of the countries, if you look at the Australians, they went home extremely disappointed at their quarterfinal result, and they're still in a two-week lockdown. They have to stay in quarantine before they can go and get comforted. by their families. So, does that count as
individual lockdown as well?
Exactly. Yeah. Does that count as your post-Olympic rest, when actually mentally it's probably one of the most difficult times of your life, having to be in quarantine on the back end of something that is so heartbreaking as going home too early for your ambition. So, yeah, I'm quite excited to see what new adaptations are made to our thought process.
It's a very interesting point, because Ashley Barton, obviously an Australian as well, had to stay away from home for 12 months because she could not get home. So usually she would do a stint in Europe of a month and go home for a month. But because she'd have to come home and quarantine for 2 weeks, she couldn't train. And so she'd lose all the gains. And it's a really big point, Marsha. So what's next? I think, that's what everybody wants to know from a South African point of view. What's next? What's our program going to be? Are we still red flagged everywhere? We know we're still on the red list for the UK, so it's difficult. Are our players going to get overseas to Europe? Are the leagues going to continue in a normal way? How much of normality is back, or how much is it going to be innovation that guides the way?
Yeah.
Well, the Dutch league will start on the 12th of September. And that's going to be as normal. And as far as I understand, there will be spectators allowed as well. Every country is just going to have to work within their own challenges and limitations, I guess.
I think my concern there, Marsh, and looking at the South African setup, with everybody being in lockdown and having been very limited in the amount of training they can do and the amount of camps they can have, we spoke about it being a leveler at the Olympics, and I definitely think it's something that we as a country benefited from during this Olympic Games. That's not to say that the achievements wouldn't have been there if we'd had the perfect preparation, but as South Africa, we don't always have the perfect preparation. We don't have the funding to put together the program that a lot of the other countries have. Now with things maybe starting to open up a little bit more, are the traditionally stronger countries and better financed countries going to go back to having these exceptional programs? And are we going to be able to, match these performances that we've had now? If the other teams are going to be able to step up their training practices and their programs and go back to where they were maybe prior to COVID hitting. I'm quite intrigued to see how we're going to adapt to that, because I can't see our situation changing very quickly. I think there's a nice base to work off now with the achievements that we've had in Tokyo, but these things do take time. So it's going to be, for me, really interesting to see if we can piggyback off this kind of performance that we've had now and push that into 2022, or if it's going to be affected with other teams kind of taking leaps and bounds because things are opening up again.
Yeah, absolutely. Just how much of the gains that we've made do we lose now? That's something that's very important for Robin van Ginkel, for Gareth Ewing, and probably even more than them, for Gary Dolly, Reggie at the High Performance, whoever's taking over there. We got to make some important decisions now that bring the best out of our teams. Our women...
But we do know that... that we've been quite open about encouraging the men in particular to play in the European League. So hopefully if that is a success and we get some of the players, Justin, you can speak about it, but at club level, they're training 5 times a week and they're playing a competitive game on the weekend. So that hopefully will also help keep the momentum. But yes, it's disruptive to any national program where other national teams are doing that plus a national program alongside. But, I guess at a certain level, we've also got to accept the situation for what it is and work off those opportunities. I'm not sure if we have the same replicated on the women's side, but I can also imagine that if all your players are based in Europe, it does also present some other challenges for you on the ground.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that the national staffs are going to have to work out. It is a discussion that we've been having behind the scenes on the WhatsApp groups you know, speaking to a lot of people about. But I think, you know, a lot of the good, a lot of the best national teams over the last few years have been able to successfully combine the two. You know, Argentina have had most of their players based in Europe for a long time, and that's resulted in them becoming Olympic champions, you know, a couple of years ago. So I think it is possible. I think it requires, you know, some structure and you know, clear communication to be in place. But, you know, with that said, I do think the opportunity is there. And I think now with our world ranking having been bumped up, especially for the men, you know, that should make the process of getting into Europe to play a little bit easier as well. You know, that's been a challenge for the last 5-6 years when we've been ranked outside the top 10. And if we can keep a top 10 place, it does make it easier. So I'm hoping that we can take advantage of that and encourage guys to get overseas, you know, make their mark, and also just improve the level of the game for the guys back home when they come back with the skills and the experiences that they've gained.
Yeah, and the European leagues are also going to be flooded with a lot of Australians this coming season.
Definitely.
So we can also look into what are they doing with the short timing, because normally it's like they have a season that they can release their players, and then the next season there's they're more encouraged to stay at home, and now they actually are, you know, there's an influx of Australians coming to Europe as well. So it'd be interesting to also look into how they're managing on the ground, given the short timeline.
Definitely. And I mean, I think the same will go for GB. They've got quite a few players coming over. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see, and it's something that I'm sure the staff will be very aware of and taking into the planning for the next couple of months.
An interesting fact that will also play big part over the next 12 months is hockey is no longer a tournament-based ranking system. Every match counts. And of course, for the South Africans, the Commonwealth Games used to be an unranked event where you could play against some weaker sides, and if you didn't win, it was okay. So that will also play a big part in our rankings over the next in the next year, and rankings become so important for sponsors, for invites. So I think there's a nice dynamic there. You've got the rankings, you've got the tournaments, you've got the Nations Cup, you've got the Commonwealth Games, you've got the World Cup, you've got the African Cup of Nations. We can't assume we're at the World Cup. We've still got to go qualify. But there is a lot there. And what I can tell all of you listeners is we have a great group of hockey minds that want to get together and talk about the game and share thoughts and share insights. And so Hockey the Podcast will not be going anywhere. We'll have more series like Talking Tokyo, where we bring special series. We got some exciting stuff coming up that I will reveal in due course. But it's been an absolute pleasure over these 14 days, 11 episodes we shared, the likes of Craig Jackson, Moabi Malibi, whose surname I always pronounce terribly, Bruce Jacobs, Tonello Polo, Siano Lichindu, Kate Woods, Marsha Cox, Justin Reedross, David Reedross, of course, joining us, Dimples, Marcel Keat, Sandile Bosman, Mark Saunders, Sulet Kutsia, Michael Baker, AJ Springsook, Bridget Key, John Wright, Andy Bernstein, Brett Tucker, Owen Mvimbi, and I don't think I've left anyone out, but Steve.
I hope not.
Steve Evans, of course. It's been great to hear your guys' thoughts. It's great to see people who are passionate about the game. It's great to see how many listeners want to talk about and listen to the game. And so it's been our pleasure. There will be so much more. Congratulations to Netherlands. Congratulations to Red Hulkert. Congratulations to Belgium. Congratulations to Craig Fulton. We're proudly South African. We're proud of the South African achievements. But most of all, we love the game of hockey, and we're here to tell the story. Marsh, Justin, thanks for helping me round it off. Tokyo has been great. I am looking forward to Paris's time zones being a little bit more suited to us, though.
Thank you. Thanks, Tyron. Thanks, Justin.
Thanks, Tyron. Yeah, thanks, Marsh. Great to speak with you guys. And looking forward to hopefully seeing you guys on the podcast again soon.
Yeah.
There's everyone.